Hello, Bill.
Hello, Matt.
Greetings from Alexandria, Virginia, where my house. We're taping the day after the debate, a little bit later than normal.
This is not your it's not your time. You're kind of like Obama, you know, a little late in the day. Maybe you'll do your best work.
There's truth to that. I actually tweeted out. The Washington Post mentioned it today. You know, Al Gore said that it could be altitude. And I'd actually tweeted out a couple of days ago that Romney was probably smart to do the debate prep in Denver because of the altitude. But the other thing you have to think about is the time of day. If you're going to be debating at 11 o'clock at night, you need to be, like, awake at 11 o'clock at night leading up to that. And you need to be practicing debating at 11 o'clock at night.
It's also good advice for test prep, by the way. You're taking the SATs at 6, at 7 in the morning. You do your practice 7 in the morning.
You got to practice like you plan. I think Rick Perry, I don't know if you remember, I think there was a time when he debated. They had like a meet the press debate in the morning. And he was much better in the morning than he ever was debating at night. I think he was probably like, in bed by 9 o'clock usually.
Well, there's even some suggestion recently that he actually has a sleep disorder that had flared up. That was why he had such an awful time in
could
the primary
be.
Debates.
I mean, people don't realize. I mean, I know that even when I don't get as much sleep, I have a much more difficult time doing a recall, you know, thinking of the specific word that you want to use, let alone the government agency you want to eliminate.
But you had a predictive tweet about the altitude, which may have been proven correct. If I may say, I also had my own predictive tweet where I pointed out that before the debate that every incumbent that has been in a presidential debate has lost the first debate, with the lone exception of Clinton versus Dole in 96. So that includes Carter in 80, Reagan 84, Bush 2000, and those are all the all the debates that we've had with incumbents, and I'm discounting Ford because he was sort of like a quasi incumbent who wasn't elected and had been there long enough, although he didn't have a great debate performance either. And I think there are two reasons for that. One is you have a record that you have to defend, and in almost every case, it's never going to be a perfect record. So you're in a position of having to explain your stuff in some detail while your challenger can just bore in on you. That seems to be a difficult dynamic to deal with. Now the second reason is escaping me, so I apologize.
But what's the other department?
What's that?
Department of Energy.
Exactly.
The other department you were going to eliminate.
Oops. So it's not. But the other point I was going to make is that in all of those cases, it never sparked a lead change in the polls. If the incumbent was losing, they stayed losing. If the incumbent was winning, they stayed winning.
That speaks
that an incumbent already has a pretty set perception, a reputation with the public, and one night's performance, no matter how big the audience is rarely dramatically alters the perception of that person, and therefore it has to be really dramatic if it's going to actually. I mean, the case you can make is Carter Reagan, where it was sort of a dead heat race, and it broke Reagan's way at the end. But that was, I think, an unusual set of circumstances where they had one debate, not three. It was at the very end of the race. Carter was deeply unpopular in the middle of the Iran hostage crisis, with the economy that was really sinking. You know, the trajectory was way down. And Carter was keeping Reagan at bay by painting him as an extremist. And Reagan shows up and upends the expectation by not coming across as an extremist. That's the closest you have for a real game-changing dynamic out of this sort of debate. But Reagan 84 and Bush in 2004, even though they had bad first debates, they didn't have the same kind of impact.
Yeah, but I think this is different. I mean, I think you're right, historically speaking, but, I mean, so much of history is being thrown out the window right now. I mean, you know, we historically don't elect senators. We historically don't reelect presidents with unemployment rates above 8%. That might happen. I mean, so I think you're right historically. I'd say a couple things. One, I don't think Obama's problem was that he was the incumbent and he had to defend his record, because I don't think a lot of it – it seems like the debate wasn't really fought over Obama's record last night. To me, the biggest problem Obama had was a lack of energy. And look, if you do public speaking, you have to sort of bullshit a little bit. You know, if I do public speaking, I may not have a lot of energy, but I'll show up and be like, okay, people, we're going to talk today. Thank you for being here. You know, you sort of put that on. You got to smile. You fake that energy. You drink a pot of coffee before you start. You go out of your way to have, you know, smile and facial expressions and body language, and you just put it on. That's what you do when you're a professional. You bring it. And Obama seemed very put upon, like he couldn't be troubled to expend that sort of energy.
Well, I think the two points are intertwined. It's not as energizing to explain the details of the Independent Medicare Payments Board. That's not the same kind of, you know, fun job it is when you're the challenger, you know, ripping apart the other guy's record. And so I think a lot of incumbents have to suffer that. They have to go through the drudgery of going through all the little things that they did.
But how hard is it to summon the energy to smile and seem energetic for 90 minutes?
Well, I mean, I think why Obama had a particularly bad energy level last night, I can't get his head and say that. But I think it's an interesting point. The reason why Romney is seen as the winner and Obama as a loser is really just energy level. It's not.
Well, I think that's a lot of it. I don't think that's just it. But I do agree that that's a big part of it.
I don't think anyone's saying, "Wow, this statement that Romney said was really awesome, and I felt so good when he said it, and I want to hear him say it again." I don't think people are around the water cooler today saying, "Well, I'm gonna think that Romney said, yeah, that was really great."
Well, okay. I think you're right. It's funny because the New York Times said that there were going to be these zingers, that Romney thought races were about zingers, and I mean that was clearly not the case, and I think it was probably meant to set up Obama, that the New York Times were sort of convenient dupes there. But I will say this about Romney. I don't think people are going to sit at the water cooler and say, wow, he really inspired me. But I think he did subtly do that, and I think that it was a matter of, as David Brooks said, shifting from rugged individualism to compassionate conservatism. You heard Romney say a lot of things like, look, I think regulations are good. We need some regulation. You can't have a free market without some without regulation. Now, that's common sense, but I think it also, he was very conservative in tone, meaning not radical in tone. He was more of a Ronald Reagan, Marco Rubio conservative than he was a kind of Tea Party, you know, red meat Michelle Bachmann conservative. And so I think that it wasn't just the energy. There was a change in his rhetoric that I think was very positive.
Oh, and I think that speaks to the good performance that he had. I don't think that kind of tonal shift is enough to be a game changer in the polls. It might, you know, stop the bleeding a little bit for the time being. I can't see him actually taking the lead because of that, number one. And number two, some of those rhetorical shifts are opening up the flip-flop charges. And that's why I think as bad as Obama's energy level was, he didn't really say anything that is YouTubable now. He didn't have a moment, a gaffe-type moment that's being looped right now, whereas Romney had. He had the Big Bird moment. He had a statement that he's not going to cut taxes for the rich. And you got a moment from the debate in February that Think Progress found where he said, yes, I'm going to cut taxes for the 1%, literally says it like that. And this hasn't come up as much right now, but essentially conceded that he has a voucher plan for Medicare, which is something that he's tried to avoid that label before. When it was put before him in the debate, he didn't deny it. So I think he had more things that he said that give Obama material to work with in the post-debate. I think Obama had a much better post-debate today than Romney did. I mean, Romney was kind of quiet today. I don't think Obama actually said enough stuff that is mockable. So I don't know how much mileage Romney gets out of this.
Well, I think Romney gets a ton of mileage out of it for a variety of reasons. For one thing, if Romney had had a debate performance like Obama had, it would be over.
Sure.
And you would have people pulling out money, giving money to the Senate campaign, to Republicans running for Senate, for Republicans running for House. The conservative punditry establishment would have completely abandoned him at this point. I think that it would be over. So I think that it was a huge, huge win for him. I also think that, I mean, clearly Obama has a very loyal base, but I tend to think that a lot of his support is sort of an inch deep and a mile wide, and that there were a lot of people who, because we couldn't figure out why are people sticking with Obama despite all the problems, despite the economic problems. I think really it's because they had not been given any alternative. And I think if you were Joe Sixpack last night and you just happened to turn on the TV, you could believe in something again. Wow, this guy has energy and he seems to be very competent and know what to do, how to handle everything. And I think he has the energy to actually get it done. I would not be surprised if the numbers do not move, you know, fairly significantly in Romney's favor in the next few days. And I think Romney's also aided by the fact that there's not another presidential debate for a couple weeks. There's a vice presidential debate, I think, next week.
The race is the 11th.
So I think maybe he can get a little bit of, if he doesn't commit a gaffe tomorrow, he might be able to get some growth out of this.
But, you know, I would think Joe Sixpack, if we could all talk about Americans in marketing caricatures, if you're the average voter, a low information voter, you don't follow stuff, you know, every day like you and I do, and you flip on the TV for the first time, you're checking it out, and you're seeing a really wonky debate about the intricacies of the Independent Medicare Payments Advisory Board. I think you turn that debate off in 5 minutes. I don't think you stick around very long. And I wonder if actually isn't part of our Obama strategy. You're in the lead. You don't have to land the roundhouse punch to stay in the lead. If you make this debate really, really boring, even if the other guy wins, how much of a win is it if it's being fought over all this very arcane turf? I mean, in some ways, it was really great to actually have a substantive debate for once and actually talk about some of the policy intricacies. But you can say that Obama loses on points because he was not very snappy in how he talked about some of these arcane programs. You know, it certainly wasn't talked about in a way that really brought people in and explained things well. I would certainly agree with that criticism. But as far as what does it mean politically, I don't know if a debate like that, where there's so many facts and figures being thrown about that people aren't going to grasp, if that really is going to, you know, drive the public, you know, in the arms of the other candidate. It just doesn't seem like that kind of a debate.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to overblow the importance of a debate. But I do think it is important, and I think that, I mean, I'm operating under the premise that a lot of voters don't want to be with Obama, but they didn't have a choice, and the Republican alternative was not a choice, was not a serious choice up until last night, and now, so in other words, my contention is that some of Obama's support, a certain percentage, and remember, it's a close race, was very soft, and that now they have someplace else to go, someplace else to look, and there's going to be some attrition of Obama's votes toward Romney just because he showed up and just because he had a good night. I think Obama had an absolutely horrible night. To be honest with you, Bill, if I had tried to imagine the best case scenario for Romney and really tried to stretch my imagination, he would have exceeded it last night, Wednesday night.
Well, but I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but I mean, you also seem to think that, you know, Romney didn't win the entire race last night. He has to still build on this for.
Oh yeah, no, I agree. But I think the other thing too, and it goes back to the compassionate conservative thing. You know, a lot of the reason that people weren't with Romney was because of he's Richie Rich, the Bain stuff, the 47% stuff. It didn't come up last night or Wednesday night. I should say Wednesday night because God knows when, you know, when this might air. Probably Friday, but who knows?
But the fact that it didn't come up, does that exonerate Romney? Does it mean that it's off the table for the next 3 weeks? Or do you just get lucky that Obama didn't mention it? Does it mean he's not going to get punched in the face come the next debate?
Well, number one, I think Romney was, I think Obama was stupid not to mention it. I was very surprised that Obama didn't hammer him with it, but I don't think it's over.
Well, that was the point I was going to make in the first place, that it's hard for an incumbent president to be that aggressive, because, I mean, we've talked in different contexts.
Well, he talks tough on the stump, though. I mean,
when you're face to face with someone and you're really hitting your challenger hard, I think there's a punching down element to that that could seem unpresidential. I think hems incumbents in. And the challenger doesn't have that same kind of restraint. So I do think he left a lot of stuff on the table because he was concerned that might backfire and seem a little unseemly.
But I think, but there were two factors at play. There was the fact that Romney didn't get hit for the 47% for the "I like firing people." But then there's the fact that Romney started changing his language and his tone. And talking about, he told this story about a woman who came up and her husband lost a job, and he talked about how some regulations are good, and he talked about how he liked the Massachusetts plan. So it was a bit of a kinder, gentler, more compassionate, more empathetic. I don't know. It was a kinder, gentler Romney,
right?
And so I think that he, I'm not saying it's like a cure all, but I think that he made a huge step and becoming more populist. And like, one of his problems, I think, was, and I'd written about this, and Molly Ball at The Atlantic had written about this, like, working class whites in Ohio who like listen to country music and drink Pabst Blue Ribbon, and always, not always, but they should be like an automatic vote for the Republican, but because Romney is seen as an out of touch rich guy, you know, as to paraphrase Mike Huckabee, not the kind of guy like your dad, but the kind of guy who fired your dad. Romney wasn't winning those votes over. I think he made a big step toward winning those votes over Wednesday night.
Now, in some of those instances, though, here he is. He's actually taking credit for Romney Care. He's saying he's going to have his own brand of regulation of Wall Street. He's attacking Obama for being too close to big banks. And he's insisting that he's not going to cut taxes. You'd say he's shifting his tone. You can say it's an outright flip-flop, but he's saying, hey, you're not going to get a tax cut at the end of the day. I'm just going to cut rates, and I'm going to close loopholes, and it's all going to be a wash. These things, is there any agita on the conservative side that Romney is leaning too far away from traditional conservatism and stoking fears that he is being Mr. Etch-a-Sketch. He never was a true conservative, and now he's running towards the left to try to get back in the race. Is there any concern about that on the right?
No. And I think some of it's that, you know, Republicans and conservatives are just now so focused on winning that they're willing to overlook a multitude of sins. I think some of it is that, look, this was a debate to have in the primary, but now Romney's the nominee. He's got to have a way to explain Romney Care, and I think he had a pretty darn good answer to it Wednesday night, including talking about how it passed in a bipartisan fashion and how Obamacare, conversely, was rammed through. But I also think some of the things that sound unconservative really aren't. I mean, a lot of conservatives want to break up the banks. A lot of conservatives think that the tax code is all junked up and that deductions skew the tax code and create false incentives. And
well, most conservatives want there to be a net revenue cut. They don't want it to be a revenue neutral at the end of that tax reform. Isn't that right?
Well, it's like someone like Grover Norquist, for example, views getting rid of exemptions or deductions as a tax hike, but not every conservative does. And I think it might be an area where there could be some compromise, where conservatives aren't against revenue. And frankly, I've always thought that the marginal tax rates are the most important thing, because when you lower them, you create incentives to spur, you know, whatever. People can plan ahead, hire an extra employee, build a factory. I mean, all those things. But I don't want to get too in the weeds on it. The last thing I'll say is that I think that a lot of what Romney did was not flip-flopping or moving to the center on policy. It was becoming a better communicator and talking. You know, Ronald Reagan was a populist, a conservative populist in the way. Marco Rubio talks about, you know, the moral case for free market, and talks, you know, when he talks about the middle class, he starts off by talking about how it's, you know, every country has rich people and poor people, but America is great and special because you can come here and you can know that you can work your way into the middle class, and we need to protect that so that people like my dad, who worked their way into the middle class, so that their kids could go to college. I mean, these are like powerful things that Romney is finally getting around to talking about in that very personal manner. So I think that some of it's just a rhetorical change, not a policy change.
Now, I thought the one out of the biggest mistake Romney made was the PBS line. It just struck me as a leading with one's chin kind of moment. He doesn't have a lot of line item proposals of things he wants to cut. The one thing he comes up with is PBS, and explicitly says Big Bird. He takes the most popular part of PBS and puts that up front. Say, this is what I'm going to whack to prove I'm going to cut the budget. And it's, you know, it's a tiny sliver of the budget. It's something that most people like. Republicans try to go after it in the Newt Gingrich days, and it backfired on them then. You know, Obama's having good fun with it today on the stump, saying, you know, thank goodness finally someone is taking on Big Bird. It's about time. Is there any concern there that you know, Romney still isn't that as good as the debate was? He still had those moments that harken back to some of his weaker debate performances, where he had unforced errors that got him in trouble later on.
I don't think there's any concern. I think you're probably right that I don't think that they went in there planning to say that. I think that Romney improvised, and it's probably a tactical error just because it opens up attacks and demagoguery. You know, I think I saw today that the revenue that Big Bird makes off of merchandise sales by far exceeds the amount of federal funds they get. But you're right. I mean, it's the kind of thing that's easy to demagogue. And you know, Big Bird, like, sent out a tweet apparently about it. So I frankly hate those shows. Like, as someone who has a son and another one on the way, I really wish that Sesame Street would just go away. And,
but my PBS Kids app gives me a lot of breaks during the day. I probably use it as a crutch too much. But
and my kid's watching Breaking Bad, though. I mean, but anyway, what else was I going to say? Oh, a couple other things. I guess two other things I wanted to bring up about the debate were, one, I think the debate format really helped Romney, and I think that I predict that the future debates will be much tougher, that Obama will be much sharper, and that the moderators will control the debate more. They'll enforce stricter time limits, and they'll probably ask more leading questions, like, what about your gaffes? I mean, think of what didn't get asked last night. You know, questions. This is the kind of leading questions that conservatives have to put up with all the time. It's things like, Governor Romney, you've been plagued with gaffes, you know? I mean, just like, how do you handle that? How does it make you feel? I mean, Romney didn't have to answer any of those, like, concerned troll questions.
I don't feel this is that dramatically different than other general election presidential debates. I mean, it's different than the primary debates that we've seen this election and past. But, you know, we've shifted since 1992 away from the murderer's row of a panel of journalists that can pile one follow-up after
if
another.
If Kitty Dukakis were raped and murdered, would you support
the death? That was the last one of those. and it was after that, and that was when the League of Women Voters was running the show. It shifted to the Commission on Presidential Debates, which is run by a former DNC and RNC chair. They shifted to single moderators, and single moderators don't have the same juice.
Are they all single moderators? Is that
ever since 92? I mean, single moderators in town halls.
I never thought about that. So they're all okay.
Yeah, and when you have a single moderator set up, You can't really do follow-ups without being a jerk. It's easier to have follow-ups if you got three compadres who are going to back you up. And so the whole format is designed so politicians can steamroll the moderator. I feel it's been this way for a long time now. And they keep asking Larry back because he's the weakest of them all.
So you're defending Lehrer then. You don't think that
I hate the format,
especially.
I don't like this format. I'd rather have the Murderer's Row format. And
the what format?
The Murderer's Row. When you're up against four journalists, and if you try to wriggle out of one question, the next journalist is going to come back and say, "Wait a second, you didn't answer this guy's question." That doesn't happen as much with the single moderator setup. I think it's by design. I think both parties agree to it. It keeps the politicians and the political teams in charge of the situation. There's less unpredictability that way.
Yeah.
And these guys they don't play fact checker. They don't play referee. So if you want to lie up the storm, and this is the problem with lying. If you want to call someone their lies, it's on your shoulders, not a third party. And so if you say, "Hey, you're lying," then the guy's going to say, "Well, no, you're lying." And now it's a he said, and that's right. That's going to be a draw.
The other thing that I thought, my other theory for Obama's sort of toned down persona last night was sort of like, Newt Gingrich was much better when the crowd could applaud him. And I suspect that Barack Obama, if the crowd could have applauded him or sort of laughed when he said something, then he might have gotten a second wind, gotten his swagger, gotten into it. But the fact that the rules would not allow the crowd to applaud, I wonder if that, it seems like Romney's fine with that, but I feel like Obama would have been better off if the crowd could have been involved.
Well, it's something else. That's not a new rule. I mean, that's something else that also changed with the Shifting Commission. If you see the clip of Dan Quayle in 88 getting slapped by Lloyd Benson, "I knew Jack Kennedy, you know Jack Kennedy," the crowd hoops and hollers at that. That was what stopped having unruly audiences. Ever since then, they've always had rules saying everyone shut up.
How do you know all this stuff about the debates?
I'm a geek. Or I'm getting it wrong.
Did you just brush up on this, or would you have known this like 3 months ago?
I feel like this has been in my head for a while, and sometimes I say these things, and someone calls me on the thread and says I get it wrong, so I apologize if I got the facts wrong here, but that's my recollection. Obama didn't get to play to the crowd in 2008 against McCain. There wasn't any hooping and hollering during those debates.
Well, you remember the primary debate. I know that's completely different,
yes.
But the primary debate when Newt Gingrich, John King from CNN asked him about his alleged wife, what was it? Wasn't wife swapping, wasn't threesome, it was an open marriage. Sorry. And Newt just like bitch slapped him left and right, and the crowd, like, and Newt would like wait till the crowd died down applauding and then be like, "And let me tell you something else. I cannot believe you asked me that question. It is an insult to this debate." And like then the crowd would go wild, and Newt was just like feeding off of it.
That's why I always thought it was always strange that Newt was telling the conservative voters, "Nominate me based on my debate performances, because this is what I'm going to do to Obama." But the format of these debates isn't like that at all. So if he tried to pull that, it would be dead silent.
But the other funny thing is, but Newt always wanted the Lincoln-Douglas debates that wouldn't even have a moderator.
But which would also never happen. No one would agree to that. That was always fantasy. Although I gotta say, this kind of debate is the next closest thing to having no moderator. The one difference of this debate, though, that hasn't been, people are kind of maligning it. Most of the past debates recent years have been more scripted. 2 minutes, 2 minutes, 60 seconds, 60 seconds out, and this was designed to have more flexibility and have more back and forth between the two candidates. It was designed to have less moderator. That was the point. And in some ways,
do you think Lehrer is getting a raw deal from a lot of liberals who say that he had too laissez-faire, too permissive, too
He is doing what he was told to do. This is how the debate format was structured. He is not uniquely weak at the job. He did his job. I don't think the fact that Romney went over a little bit on time is why Obama didn't have a good energy level. Those instances were pretty minor. So I don't think it's fair to blame the moderator for the circumstance. Blame the structure of the debate, which prevents any third party from saying, hey, what you just said is completely factually wrong by every objective measure. No one is in the position to do that right now. And that to me is the issue. So I think Lehr gets picked because I do think he's sort of uniquely toothless in the job. But again, that's why he was picked to do it. Not that he fell down the job. So I think that, and I think that when you have this setup where they have a looser back and forth, in some ways it's more entertaining. In some ways you do dig deeper into the specific issues than you have when it's just talking point, talking point, talking point, talking point. So in one sense that's an improvement, but you've actually further weakened the moderator role and put that moderator even farther into the background. Well, I think it's easier to lie and not get called on it, but I think it's probably a marginal difference from where we were in the past several debates, because with the single moderator setup, it's always like that.
Well, how would you, if you were designing the next debate, aside from having you and me moderate, and I think we should sit higher than the candidates if that happens, but aside from that, I mean, how would you, if you were to fix the problems with the debate.
You know, the only way you'd probably be able to get back to a murderer's row setup, and it's probably will never happen, is if you had, you know, two traditional media, one Fox journalist, one MSNBC journalist. That's probably the only way you could get away with having a panel and not being called out as biased. I mean, I'd be perfectly fine.
All right, so let's do it. I'm going to nominate Brit Hume as the Fox journalist.
Like if you did a Brit Hume and say a Mika Brzezinski, for example, neither one ostensibly is primarily in an opinion role, even though they have opinions. They both have journalistic backgrounds. They're not Al Sharpton and Sean Hannity. If you had that, you know, along with the New York Times, White House beat reporter. And I would a policy reporter, have an economics reporter or a healthcare reporter, not just a political reporter. So you have a mix of people there with different perspectives, but they can play off of each other and have an easier time pressing a candidate if they're being evasive. I would think that would be the best you could pull off in this current environment, but I don't think either party is going to agree to that. I think the Commission on Presidential Debates was created to avoid having these types of fractured situations.
Interesting stuff. Well, we've been talking about the debate for 33 minutes. Anything else? You want to do a short show or anything else you want to hit on?
No, I'm sleepy. You're sleepy. I think we can. We can save for next week for all the Ryan Biden fun. And also there's a Brown Warren debate next week, which I'm going to go to. I have a ticket for.
Oh, wow.
Cause this is the only Western Massachusetts debate in Springfield, is happening on Wednesday. And these are arguably the best Senate debates that are going on right now. I mean, these are two very distinctive personalities who do not like each other. And are going at it pretty hard.
He calls her
Professor Warren, right?
Or whatever.
So there might be some stuff to talk about there too. But I also think a lot of people are looking forward to Biden Ryan. I remember, I actually didn't remember this, but I just saw looking up the ratings, the past ratings, that actually the Palin Biden debate had the biggest audience of all the debates last time, bigger than all the Obama McCain debates.
So
I wonder if this might be the high water mark too. I don't know.
I think it was, but but this will be a good one too. It'll be very interesting. All right, man. So So we'll be back next week talking about that.
All right. Get some rest, sir.
All right. We'll have a good talking with you. Always a pleasure. And until next week, good night, America.